following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 85 for Wednesday, March 16th, 2011. Much ado about nothing. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 85. We are here to talk about a lot of nothingness.
Quite much, yes.
We are aware that CSUN is going on this week, but we will hold off on coverage of that until next week because the first 2 days of this week were given over to pre-conference workshops, and the conference didn't really start until today with all the presentations. So there isn't much of a write-up on it, and so I thought we'd hold off on that until next week.
So I figure between probably Saratech and Blind Bargains, there'll be probably 20 or 30,000 podcasts.
At least. At
least. Interviews and things.
Yeah, and so it's better to let the pros do it, and we will follow in their footsteps and rehash what they say.
Thank you. In other words, we'll just steal what they've got. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
Because they can afford to go and we can't.
Yeah, precisely. And so it is at the University of California at Northridge, and it is always there because they have a large Center for Disabilities there, and they're basically internationally known for their at the university for their access for people with disabilities. It's an international conference, happens every year. It does not include just blindness. It's pretty much all disabilities, focused on education, more so, I think, than ATIA in January. Which is focused on new product releases. This is focused on education. There are some new products, but it's a lot of presentations and conferences, and we'll talk about it next week.
I'm tired.
Yeah. This week, in wake of the Apple announcement last week, this week's been sort of blah. So, you know, we're here to talk about a few things.
Yeah, but, you combine it with South by Southwest, where all the mainstream tech was this past week.
Yeah, but all they were talking about was the parties they went to, so it doesn't sound like much happened.
That's a lot of it. Well, I guess it's kind of like CSUN. It's sort of conferences and seminars and symposiums and things like that.
Okay.
That's, and lots of parties.
Yeah, parties. And CSUN, if you are there and don't know this, they are having a tweet up. Well, it's tonight, so they won't do much people much good. It's tomorrow night.
Is it tomorrow?
It's tomorrow night.
Oh.
The CSUN tweet up is tomorrow night. I don't know how it works, but you can find information about it on Twitter. The hashtags, incidentally, for CSUN this year are CSUN11 is the official one, and you can also find things under CSUN2011.
And just pound CSUN.
CSUN, yeah. But CSUN11 is the official hashtag. If you want to go to the conference website, it is csunconference.org.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of information trickling out from little things.
And it sounds like it's a pretty amazing conference. You can find the programs and materials and things on that website.
Yeah, we'll have to add that to the bucket list at some point.
The bucket list?
Yeah. There was a movie and I believe a book out or whatever that people should have like a bucket list, which is sort of things you want to do.
Oh, that's definitely on my bucket list. That and the AFB and ACB conventions and ATIA.
Your grief is boring.
Huh?
That's boring. It should be things like going to Disneyland.
Well, I mean, like stuff that's also on my bucket list that's not boring includes like skydiving and bungee jumping and maybe climbing a mountain or going to the Grand Canyon. Going to Yellowstone National Park. Hmm. That stuff's not boring.
Yeah, maybe not. Heck, I just want to get to Virginia.
Yeah, you haven't been many places.
I haven't been to Virginia, and it's only like 3 hours away.
Although I can't say too much because I don't have much of a desire to travel. I did all my traveling in college and high school, and that's it. I don't really care to go places.
Yeah, I look at how much it costs, and then I go, yeah, I can look at a picture.
Okay, we are getting sidetracked.
Yes, but we don't have that much to talk about, and
that's true.
We'll fill her with a little bit of crud.
Yeah, well, we do have a couple of things I want to mention from last week. Do we want to do the listener mail first or the Android stuff first from last week?
We can do listener mail.
Let's do listener mail first. So we got a mail from a couple of listeners. We got one from David Partrick about the LookTel money identifier that we talked about last week.
Yes, the $1.99 app on the iPhone that will identify currency. He pointed out that he couldn't understand why $2 was too expensive when instead a $20 reading app would be better suited for spending $20. But it's kind of one of those things I see as more of a, if you can get something to do it for free, why pay $2 to do it? As opposed to a $20 reading app like Bookshare, as opposed to buying a $400 device. He pointed out that he had tried Omobi and it would not even read the currency that he put in front of it. And he also tried, what was the other one? Noogle Noggles. And yeah, it just basically said U.S. currency.
Wow.
So that's kind of pointless.
Yeah. So I did purchase it. I will do a Tech Access Daily tip to compare them once I get myself squared away with the app. But I do appreciate that he sent us the email. Thank you for the heads up. I decided to bite the bullet and purchase it.
Lynn sent me a Twitter and she said that the iBill is really a small device, not the size of a glasses case. And someone, I had seen a money identifier before and it was, somebody had called it the iBill. I don't know whether they meant that it was similar to the iBill or what, but it was actually, you laid the money on it. It was a full device. You were saying you thought it might be the actual Orbit that they meant.
There's one called an Orbit.
Not sure.
I don't know. They all kind of blend together because there have been several over the years.
Yeah.
And Lynn, this is Lynn from Malin's Slice of Life podcast.
Yes. And the iBill is actually only about the fifth of a size of a bill. It's the same width as a bill and you just slide the tip into it.
Okay.
That device is $99 as opposed to the iPhone, which is $300 or $200 depending on which model you get.
Yes.
And $2 extra for the LookTel.
But it's the case of if you have the iPhone.
Very true.
You may not need the iBill.
Yeah, exactly.
So, this would be really cool if they branched it out to include other currencies. I think that would be fantastic, like from other countries.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That would be wonderful. But this is a good start.
Very much so.
We have another listener mail from Robin Christopherson, who wanted to know how our podcast could be linked in TuneIn Radio when TuneIn Radio focuses on, well, radio. And so we wanted to explain that radio time works a little differently than...
Yeah, it gives you radio shows along with podcasts, and TuneIn Radio works in conjunction with that. So it's basically pulling in the RSS feeds of various shows and podcasts and actually playing them on your actual mobile device.
Yeah, you don't download them like you would with iTunes, but it will stream them.
Yeah, it works kind of like the iBlink radio app.
Mm-hmm.
So that is kind of how it's in there. You can also find things like Twit and Buzz Out Loud and some other mainstream podcasts on there. I don't think a lot of people know that you can get podcasts from that app.
I never use it for that, but so that is a really cool thing to know. Now I want to talk a little bit about the mobile accessibility product that Code Factory has developed for the Android market. Last week we talked about it, and I kind of was a little down on it. I was kind of upset that, well, you know, it seems like they developed this blind ghetto product, so to speak, because it has its own suite of products, apps, I guess I should say calendar, alarm, email, web browser, and you're not using, you know, apps from the marketplace. The Code Factory did that for a reason, and until I listened to Serotalk Tech Chat 93, I didn't understand that. The reason that they did that was because developing for Android is a little bit different than developing for the Apple platform or the Symbian or Microsoft mobile platforms. With the Symbian and Microsoft platforms, there is no accessibility API that you have to work with. With the Android platform, they have what's called an accessibility API, and this means that it can only capture certain parts of the text. So if there are things in apps that it can't capture, then any screen reader that's built around the API can't capture them either. So Code Factory had to build its own framework in order to get certain pieces of text or certain parts of the screen to be recognized, basically. And so that's the reason, one of the reasons that they did that. These apps can also be used by third-party developers, I think. They're sweet. They're going to open it up to third-party developers to build more apps for it. Additionally, the accessibility suite comes with this mobile accessibility platform, but the platform itself also has something like Spiel or TalkBack that is a screen reader component that will allow you to navigate the rest of the phone. And we may not have made that clear before, but the product does come in two pieces. One piece like Spiel, and the other piece, their suite of products.
Yeah, and Spiel is the screen reader that you can download from the App Store.
Yeah, one of them.
The Marketplace. Mm-hmm. It's not part of Code Factory.
No.
Or TalkBack.
No, TalkBack is another screen reader.
Yeah, TalkBack is another screen reader. But apparently the Code Factory will work in conjunction with those to do things. So I don't know. I think there's been a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings as far as the Code Factory product. I was listening to one podcast and they were railing on the fact that, well, you're getting a bunch of apps that you already have, and the only thing that they've improved is just having a web browser that you can access. But by having a suite of apps, you immediately have something you can use. You don't have to worry about whether or not a developer has created something accessible, because most likely it's lacking.
Yeah. Especially if they're developing around the API that Google has already in the operating system, which most likely everyone is. Now, if you want a really good, thorough discussion of mobile accessibility and Android, you can download Serotalk Tech Chat 93. And in that tech chat, they do an interview with Caroline Ragat from Code Factory, and she talks very thoroughly about the product, the structure, what it does, and why it was developed in the way that it was. And also, of course, they've got JJ Meadow on there and Accessible Anna, and Anna, I guess I should say, and some others to talk about the new Android Access website.
Yeah, I believe Joe Steinkamp is sort of leading that discussion, because he is using that.
Yeah.
We'll give him a plug while we're at it. That's
Ranger Station on Twitter.
Yes. There. You had your name mentioned.
There you go. So that's enough about Android. I beat it into the bush, but I felt it was worth mentioning.
Everyone's kind of hung up on the fact that they've got the suite of apps. Mm-hmm. They don't get the idea that, hey, there's an API here that people can use to develop.
Yeah.
And two, it's the first version. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can only get better.
I mean, and to some extent, whether the suite of apps is necessary is dependent on whether Google's API gets better.
Yeah, and it gives people an idea of what is possible with the API, that you can make a calendar app and contacts and things like that that are actually accessible to use right out of the box when you purchase the app. But that is, I believe, $95 American.
Yes.
For that.
More Google news. Google has created a person finder for Japan, the Japan disaster. So if you are looking for your loved ones, there is a record up on Google. You can enter in the name of the person you're looking for, and it will find them. It is japan.personfinder.appspot.com.
Or you can get to it by going to the google.com webpage, and there is a link going to all sorts of information related to the Japan disaster, earthquake, tsunami. If you have not been under a rock somewhere, you have heard of this.
Yeah. Additionally, AT&T, Sprint, and Verizon are offering free texting and calling for people to call Japan and search for their loved ones and make sure things are okay.
Yeah, which is amazing. And one of the really good stories that came out of the Japan tsunami thing is that Apple had done such a great job over there in Tokyo by holding their stores open. They allowed employees to be able to actually stay at the store. They also brought in chargers so that people could actually charge their phones, let people use their wireless internet, because evidently that's not a big thing over there. Or not something that is widespread to where every mm-hmm. location has wireless internet. So that's kind of a cool thing that went on during and continues to go on at this point. So just a little added thing there.
Yeah, that's good. The AT&T texting and calling is for free, goes on until the end of March. I think Verizon, theirs goes until April 10th. But again, those things may change, so keep an eye and an ear out for that,
exactly.
For any changes that occur with those.
And also related into that, this past weekend was the launch of the iPad 2 by Apple. Everyone was clamoring for it.
Clamor.
Some more than others, I guess. Basically went on sale last Friday at 5 p.m., where people were able to stand in line and purchase their iPad 2s.
Why do they start selling at 5 p.m.? That is so random.
Conspiracy theorists think that it was because they wanted lines. Other people just think it was trying to get media coverage. Others just think it keeps
Apple.
People from having to take off work, and it's just something different to try as far as marketing. The Japan earthquake tsunami situation has also delayed the iPad 2 from coming out there until later. They haven't released a date or time for that. Rest of the world should be getting the iPad 2 on the 25th of March, I believe is the date that they have tossed out there. Mixed reviews on the iPad 2. A lot of people are saying that, yes, it is great to have something that can do GarageBand and iMovie at such a great rate. A lot of people really like the GarageBand app. The other thing is that it has cameras. The standstill photo camera is not that great, but apparently some people are thinking that the quality of the video camera actually scales up when you are taking video to a higher resolution.
Oh, that's good.
But nobody has really been able to nail down how many megapixels or anything like that. So it's somewhere between the iPod Touch and the iPhone 4, which is a pretty big gap.
Mm.
But anyway, if you are trying to determine whether or not you want an iPad, or you have loved ones saying, I want to know, do I need to get the iPad 2? David Letterman of the CBS Late Show has come up with a top 10 list that he is notoriously famous for every night. And here is his top 10 list for whether or not you should get an iPad.
Here we go. Top 10 reasons to buy the iPad 2. Number 10, special microchip makes it obsolete 50% faster. Number 9, Apple will sell it to you for $100 if you tell them Dave sent you. Number 8, so thin you can use it to chop vegetables. Number 7, comes with a camera on the front, one in the back, and one in your neighbor's shower. Hi-yo!
Hey-yo! Hey-yo!
Number 6, this is off topic, but who says, who buys tickets to see a live Charlie Sheen show? And number 5, new app which makes any room smell like biscuits. Number 4, no number 4, writer's still online for an iPad 2. Number 3, isn't it about time you did something for you? Number 2, instead of a touch screen, it has a lick screen. And number 1 reason to buy the iPad 2, in this economy, who doesn't have $600 to throw around? There you go.
And so that is your top 10 list.
I don't think I get number 2.
Number 2?
Yeah. Instead of a touch screen, it has a lick screen?
I guess so that you can use your tongue to touch apps and things.
That's stupid.
I don't know. Yeah, usually number 2 is better than number 1, but kind of was lacking in some places there.
I do like number 4. No number 4. Writer still in line for an iPad 2.
Actually, they may be waiting for a little bit longer because the iPad sold so well over the opening weekend that apparent online order shipments are probably going to be delayed 3 to 4 weeks.
Ooh.
They were saying maybe 1 to 2 weeks. Now it's like 3 to 4, maybe 5 weeks shipments. So no telling how many of those little buggers they sold.
Speaking of Apple wanting to make things shiny and new, there are some problems with your iPhone 3G. Not only do you not get iOS 4.3, but there are some security holes now going on.
Yeah,
with you.
iOS 4.3 dropped support for the 3G, so not long until probably the 3GS gets dropped after people have purchased it for the $49 price that a lot of places are offering it for. Apparently, 4.3 fixed a lot of security issues, such as a memory corruption problem and malicious TIFF files that can cause code to secretly run on your iOS device. These fixes have not been pushed out to Apple iOS devices such as the iPhone 3G or previous versions of the iPod Touch because it's not compatible.
Whoops.
So that's kind of one of the caveats you have to worry about when purchasing one of the older models of the iPhone, is that Apple will drop support for it after about 2 years.
Yeah.
So you have to worry about your security and everything. And speaking of security, we released a tip today that gives you explanation of how to safely and securely wipe your iPhone or iOS device.
Yes. iPhone erase.
Yeah.
And we are releasing one tomorrow talking about some Twitter security settings.
Why, yes.
Twitter has recently enabled something called HTTPS security. We talked about it for Facebook a few weeks ago. Now Twitter has enabled it. So this means that if you are using the Twitter website to post tweets, reply, do searches, that kind of thing, people can log in using your cookies and pretend to be you after you've logged off.
This is the old Fire Sheep hack that came out a few months ago.
So Twitter has launched HTTPS security in response to that. And you can set in your account settings so that when you are on the website doing tweets and replies and all this kind of thing with Twitter, it can be HTTPS secure. So Fire Sheep and such hackers cannot get in there and compromise you.
Yeah, and if you're doing tweeting and everything using the web page from, say, home, you really don't have to worry about it as much. But if you actually go mobile into a coffee shop or something like that, that's when it really becomes necessary to turn that on.
Right.
The official Twitter app for the iPhone and I believe the Android will also have this functionality set up.
One caveat is that other API clients don't yet have support for this. This includes
things like Seismic and TweetDeck.
Right.
They do not have that yet. The developers will actually have to do that. So I'm assuming that probably Twitter client will have an upgrade coming at some point to use
this. On the heels of that, Twitter is discouraging third parties from developing API clients.
Well, not discouraging. They're saying don't do it.
I was trying to be nice.
Oh.
Yeah, they are prohibiting new developers from coming on board with new API clients.
Yeah, they're claiming that it's starting to diminish the experience of Twitter.
What?
Well, it's diminishing the experience that everybody has on Twitter because they're using different apps. They're not using the official Twitter app. They're not using the web page. A lot of people are saying that that's just because they want to put promoted tweets at the top of your contact and information, your feed and everything. But all these Twitter apps like TweetDeck do not do that. So they're kind of getting irritated at that. I guess this basically comes down to if you start a business and you don't have a profit model, these are the kind of things that you have to do to irritate all of the developers. A lot of the applications out there like TweetDeck and Seismic will be grandfathered in because they already exist now, but this is mostly for new developers. If they provide something that is actually unique and the Twitter app or website does not provide it, then you're still able to do your development. So I don't think the Twitter client will have any problems with this because they are accessibility overwhelming.
Yeah, I think Twitter is pretty much safe. So essentially what we're saying is new API clients cannot be developed. This is sort of a downer for people who maybe want to develop accessible Twitter alternatives to Twitter. But apps that are currently here but want to develop unique things can stick around.
Yeah, it's kind of like somebody was saying that Twitter later... Twitter later. Yes, that's a difficult one to say. I can't do product names nor people names. Oy. Somebody was saying that you can actually film video. I believe it was Leo Laporte was saying that you could actually film video and automatically send it to a tweet. So
wow,
you could actually post.
Cool.
You could So you could actually post the video straight into your Twitter stream without having to do really a whole lot of anything. So that would be a function that Twitter later could say, well, Twitter, you don't have this. We do. We're staying.
Mm-hmm.
So something to be aware of.
So there are three things here. No new apps. Apps that are just around and not unique are stuck. Unique apps can develop their uniqueness.
And you know how it is. When things get stuck, usually they fall off.
Pretty much.
Speaking of new things, Firefox 4 will be coming out next week on March 22nd. Apparently that is going to be the drop date, which is kind of interesting because they just now released the release candidate only a couple days ago.
Yeah. Doesn't give it a lot of time, does it?
Yeah. So you're most likely going to be prompted with a wonderful, please install Firefox 4 and reboot, I'm going to guess.
Yes. So that will be death to Firefox 3. Whatever now. And also in the news is death of the Microsoft Zune.
Why, yes. The Zune, popular little MP3. Well, no, it wasn't really popular.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going out on a limb there. It wasn't that popular, and that's the reason it's dying.
Exactly. It came out in 2006. It's going away in 2011. Microsoft just never really did... advertise or get the Zune, Z-U-N-E, not to be confused with the Motorola Zoom tablet, X-O-O-M. They just never really did advertise this thing.
Mm-mm.
I mean, everybody that has had one says that it's a great product. The Zune HD has a lot of features that are great that the iPods do not have, but they just didn't get the following.
Yeah, and they didn't really sell it outside the U.S. either, which was also a problem.
Yeah, and they did not, until recently. Just recently, like in the last few months, get a Zune software client for Macintosh.
Yeah.
So that kind of hurt as well, because that takes away people wanting to get into using their application. This is sad, but Zune will not go away because it is being integrated into Windows Phone 7, which isn't accessible as of yet, but it probably will at some point. So maybe they'll hang on to the logo and brand name for that recognition.
Well, I think the marketplace is going to stick around.
Yeah, the marketplace and Zune Pass, where you can actually download music and things like that, will stick around, but it'll basically be limited to Windows Phone 7 instead of actually giving you the Zune.
Microsoft has taken away something beautiful, but it has also gone to the trouble to create a beautiful new web experience for all of us.
Why, yes.
Microsoft Internet Explorer 9 has just been released.
Why, yes.
I say a beautiful experience for all of us, but that's not quite true because it does have an accessibility bug in it. There is a setting that will allow you to change the background colors if you have vision difficulties with... is distinguishing text from color backgrounds. It's not working right.
Yeah, so basically you can turn off the style sheet settings for a web page. So it'll take away the background. It'll change the fonts to a default font that you specify. The ignore color setting in IE9 now only takes away the font. It doesn't take away the background. So
whoops.
Most likely they'll probably have to tweak that a little bit or give you another checkbox. So that's something to take into account if you're used to using a plain background with, say, high contrast fonts.
Yeah.
IE9 does have better support for video, web design, and HTML5 support. So it's got a lot of pluses. But if you are one of the people that needs that ignore colors, you may want to consider not updating to that When I updated this week, it was set as an important update, but not a critical one, so it didn't automatically do anything.
Right.
So just something to keep in mind.
Actually, in mine, it was an optional update.
Was it?
Yeah, the only important update I had was the service pack.
Ah, yes. The wonderful service pack.
People are getting fails on. We have an article about that in our Delicious Links if you want to look at it.
Yeah, because apparently there are some issues with the service pack install where it will stall out. It'll give you a critical error, and you can do a few things to repair it, like running check disk or the SFC system file checker and such as that. Very minimal. I think yours failed.
It actually failed, but then I went in and it wanted to download it again. So it downloaded it again and finally installed. Maybe the download just was crap and it didn't download completely the first time.
Could be.
So, you know, yeah, we'll see. It's like 89 megs, so it's pretty big.
Actually, I think it might be more than that. Maybe not. No, I had a couple different things going on.
Mine was like 80 or something. Ah. Anyway.
And speaking of developers, well, not really, but we had mentioned previously about South by Southwest taking up the technology sector for this past weekend and this current week with their film and music festival. The conference is also having a learning experience for mobile developers as far as accessibility.
Yes, folks from Google, I think, and Android developers came to speak with mainstream developers about accessibility. And I think they were from other platforms too, weren't there?
Yes.
Yeah. And about how it is important to develop apps that include, you know, well, accessibility features, to take into account those with low vision and those, you know, who have some other disabilities. So a lot of the developers were really impressed. According to some of the articles we read anyway, some of the developers had not even considered that people with disabilities were using apps and cell phones. So apparently it seems to have done some good.
Yeah, and if you want information on the Google accessibility documentation, what they plan to do, what they request that developers consider when developing, you can go to google.com/accessibility.
And they are also at CSUN.
Yes, they are also going to CSUN to try and develop focus groups as far as what they need to do to make applications and things more accessible, which they are also in the news for not doing a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah. The National Federation for the Blind.
And NFB a couple, for short.
Yeah, a couple other groups have filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Justice because certain universities have chosen to use Google's products at their university for, you know, doing most of their functions like Gmail, Google Calendar, and Google Docs, specifically Google Calendar and Google Docs, which are more than a little
clunky
for blind individuals to use. So the NFB has gotten on the bandwagon and basically complained to the U.S. Department of Justice to try and get these universities, I believe New York University and Northwestern, among others, to stop using them.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like they're developers, they're architects, they're software engineers, but they don't think in terms of accessibility. And I mean, I work with people kind of like that. Accessibility, mm-hmm. What's that?
Right.
Don't understand it. Don't really need to worry about it type of thing. So maybe Google is going to actually start trying to improve things. Because Google Docs is a great place to put apps, great place to put files and spreadsheets, documents, that kind of thing up in the cloud so that you can share them and collaborate and that kind of thing. But for a visually impaired user using a screen reader, it's not really accessible whatsoever.
If anyone's got any tips, let me know.
Yeah, and seeing as how they
really, because I like the calendar. It's very useful. You can sync it with your iDevice, you're with your cell phone, but it's just so clunky that I hardly ever use it.
Yeah, and the Google Docs, I mean, it's great. I mean, I like using it, and they just released the Google Connect, so the Cloud Connect, so that you can actually get to documents using Microsoft products. So that's really nice, but we can't collaborate because, well, you can't get to them.
No.
Oy.
The 21st Century Communications and Video Act. may help the situation. So the 21st Century Communications and Video Act has been passed. I'm not going to go into what it talks about. If you want to find out all the details, you can see we have a very good article that gives an overview of it. But it essentially lays down some ground rules for manufacturers of software and hardware devices to follow when constructing them to take into account needs of visually impaired, deaf and hard of hearing, and people with other disabilities, such as closed captioning and other such things. So if you want to know more about it, like I said, we've got a great article on our site, but it essentially builds on the 508 compliance in the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah, it's pretty complex as far as the things that it covers.
Yeah. So if you want that, I'd urge you to check it out if you're at all interested. Check out our site. What were you thinking? A politician, I believe a representative in the state of New Hampshire, has resigned. He was on the phone with a constituent, and he happened to say that he thought mentally disabled people should be sent to Siberia. They didn't have a place there, but they needed to find a place for them in Siberia.
Yeah, rent a piece of land and put them there.
Absolutely. He was talking about homelessness. They were having a discussion about homelessness, and somehow this came up. And apparently he says he was joking, but apparently, she didn't think so, and not a whole lot of other people thought so.
Yes, Martin Harty, H-A-R-T-Y, of New Hampshire is, get this, a 91-year-old freshman lawmaker.
Ooh. This means, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, that this is his first time in politics.
91-year-old. Is there no one else to run for political offices in New Hampshire?
91? What was he doing this for? Attention seeking?
I don't know. Maybe he's running out of Social Security benefits or something. I don't know. Huh. That's
anyway, he has resigned.
Yeah, I guess probably when he was growing up, they did not really know what to do with people that had mental handicaps, so they put them in homes and institutions and
things
with low standards and low quality.
It's different than saying, take him to Siberia.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's watched The Simpsons too much.
Who knows?
You know, I mean, the you don't want to learn English? Go to Russia. Okay.
That's different.
Yeah, sort of, but
that's much different.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. But anyway, he's resigned, so we won't have to deal with him anymore. But anyway, what was he thinking when he said that? I guess he wasn't.
I don't know. I think it was just a generation gap. But anyway, the lady that he was talking to called him Adolf Hitler.
Yep. And on a more technical note, we didn't know which of these stories to include, so we thought we'd include them both because both of these people were not thinking.
Obviously.
A guy in, where was it? Connecticut?
Alexander Welch in Idaho.
Oh, Idaho. Okay.
Decided that it would be a fun thing to use his smartphone, which I believe was an Android phone, to impersonate a police officer and make an actual traffic stop. Now, this is not an allowed thing here in the United States. You're not allowed to impersonate that. I believe it might even be a felony.
It is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison.
Now, he was using an app called the Police Light, and this light actually has a red light and a blue light. And it sort of simulates the little round light that police officers might put on their dashboard in an unmarked police car. And it rotates a light, and it has a loud siren and everything that comes out and flashes and does all the things. So, I mean, if you're driving along in the middle of the night, you might look back and see that light and think that, yeah, that's a police officer. I better stop.
And the driver stopped.
Actually stopped. I don't believe there was any real...
No, because he sped off.
Any real problems with it.
No.
He didn't rob them or anything like that, but the person that was stopped actually followed him to his house and called 911 and actually got the police to come after him.
And he is now in jail. He will stay there for up to 5 years, potentially. And apparently he thinks it's pretty funny. And granted, it is sort of amusing, but
So since he's from Idaho, does that mean he's a spud in a can?
Apparently so. Maybe.
For those outside of the United States, Idaho is known for making potatoes.
Growing potatoes, I guess we should say. And a slang term for potato is a spud. Don't ask me why. I have no idea where that came from.
I don't know, bud. But there's some spuds.
For not having anything to talk about, we certainly rambled long enough.
Why, yes, we did. And that is what we are known for, is to ramble and make this an indeterminate length.
Yes. Unspecified length.
Sorry, we stole a tagline from another podcast and adapted it, and occasionally indeterminate length comes out.
Yep, so this disaster of unspecified length that you have been listening to is at Tech Access Weekly, episode
85.
Yeah, I think so. Boy. You can get to our list of stories that we considered for this episode by going to delicious.com/techaccess/85. And to learn how to Twitter or email us or whatever.
Listen to the info at the end.
Yep. And stay tuned for more tips, tricks, and tidbits from our Tech Access Daily Tips feed.
Yes, and you can also check out The Melting Pot Show on Mushroom FM on Sunday nights from 7 to 10 p.m. Shameless plug for that.
Yes. And it is a fun thing. Gets more and more listeners all the time. And I want to thank again David Partrick, who listens to both The Melting Pot and the show, for contributing some music. So if you want to contribute some music of your own or have suggestions, send them along.
Yeah, and if you did not hear that, you can look for it on iTunes. I believe it's 99 cents for the single of I Unfriended You on Facebook.
That's pretty catchy.
Yeah.
I like it.
You get it in your head and you can't get rid of it.
Exactly.
Kind of like this podcast, because we just won't be quiet.
I know.
As people are going, shut up.
Shut up. But in any event, if you want to do, help us with our tips and develop things for us, or if you have story suggestions, give us a shout and we will help you along with that.
Yeah, and please send your comments and questions and or information that we screwed up to us in email or such.
Yes.
So that we can make corrections. And that we actually know people are out there listening to us ramble.
Yeah. And you can fill out our PodTrack survey.
Yes. Our anonymous PodTrack survey.
Let us know how we can improve. So anyway, I think that's it.
Yeah, sure. Maybe we could go for another hour. What about that NCAA brackets?
Please, let's not.
We could go through the sheet and pick teams.
Just download your free NCAA iPhone app and you're all set.
Yes, the March Madness app.
March Madness on demand?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, you remember something from last week. Hot diggity.
Mm-hmm. I'm not that stupid.
Well, stupid is what stupid does.
Okay. On that note, we bye-bye. Shall simply say...
Bye-bye.
Bye. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. You may follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TA_weekly. You may comment on our voice line at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. To find a list of the stories covered in each episode, please visit delicious.com/techaccess. Feel free to visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.